Hello there, this is Bane. When I'm not out on the streets of Gotham hunting the Batman, I find myself listening to Part-Time Fanboy on a regular basis. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at www.parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also, be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on the Twitter. Do it now, or I'll have to do something awful to your spine.
Part-Time Fanboy. Fanboy.com.
Well, let's get started. This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am Christian Horn, and I am here with my buddy Liad Goldberg, who
Hello.
Is joining me because we are not here to talk about Batman v Superman. We are here to talk about the very first sort of cinematic team up between Batman and Superman. Well, it was kind of like a three-parter episode of the Superman animated show, but it was bundled into a DVD package, and it was called The Batman Superman Movie World's Finest. I'm one of those people who is not interested in seeing Man of Steel, as anybody who listens to this podcast or is friends with me on Facebook or sees my depressing Twitter feed that I never babysit, can attest to. So, I did not have any desire to go see it. I did not want to do an episode on it. I just had no interest. After Man of Steel, I was kind of done with the Zack Snyder version of the character, which I found to be an extreme disappointment. But the Batman Superman movie World's Finest, I think, is one of the best team-ups. Well, first of all, it's like their first team-up in any media outside of comic books, I think, outside of the Super Friends, right?
I wouldn't be 100% on that, but I think so. I definitely think it's the first team-up in the kind of modern animated world or animated universe that they created. I mean, there was the Batman show first, and then they did the Superman show, if I remember correctly. And then this team-up is what happened during the show, I guess. And then, from there, it went into Justice League, if I remember correctly, at some point.
Yeah.
And then a few Justice... I think they had like two or three Justice Leagues. Like,
well, it was Justice League, and then it was Justice League Unlimited.
Yes.
And then there was a bunch of
straight-to-DVD movies. But you were saying in between that?
They did Batman Beyond. I think between like Superman and the Justice League, they did Batman Beyond, which was sort of a future version of like the Bruce Timm sort of like animated universe. But regardless, I think this is sort of one of the best sort of team ups. Obviously, look, Superman and Batman have teamed up since they were practically created, right? I can't remember when the first issue of World's Finest debuted or when Batman showed up in a Superman comic or Superman showed up in a Batman comic. But for much of their history, even post Dark Knight Returns, they've been sort of chummy, you know what I mean? Yeah. And this animated series was the first thing that actually popped into my head when I was realizing when the trailer started debuting for Batman versus Superman, and I was like, oh, I definitely don't want to see this, you know what I mean? And what would I rather watch, you know? And what the first thing that popped in my head was this, because this is sort of it's interesting. It touches on the sort of bit of tension that they have between them, especially in the beginning. But yeah. You know, and it doesn't embrace the sort of like, hey, chum, hey, pal, of like the golden age, you know, but it strides the line.
Which was a little too chummy in the golden age. I mean, it was like, I think I remember seeing a thing where they were like talking about being friends as kids if they could change the past and stuff like that. Like in one issue where they're talking about like if they had a time machine type of thing. I know that because the joke is that they wouldn't go back and save their parents. They would just go hang out as kids.
That's funny.
But yeah, they were very chummy back in the day, and that's changed a lot in modern comics.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the part of the thing is I think that so much of like Batman's character has really gone to the extreme, you know what I mean, where it's like I'm just so obsessive and I'm a tool for justice and and so much of the sort of charm of the character has sort of fallen by the wayside, you know.
True.
Especially when he is Batman, you know what I mean.
Right.
And
that was actually something I found really, really interesting and that I really liked about this movie was that Batman was Batman, and he was also Bruce Wayne, but he was his character was he was still, you know, the obsessive you know, Dark Knight, but at the same time, like, there was I'm jumping ahead a little, but there is a scene where he's, you know, fighting this robot thing and he needs help. And then the next time he goes against the robots, he comes prepared.
Yeah.
And it seems like in modern comics, modern movies, he's just always prepared for anything all the time.
Yeah, yeah,
And it didn't have that. And it was really, you know, it was interesting. It was good character development, I guess.
Yeah, I think that here's the thing is I really think that Batman animated series and the Superman one to a certain extent, those are sort of almost the greatest distillations of those characters in like any medium. I mean, even the comic books. I mean, because of the fact that they didn't have to make a comic book like every month for like 50 years or whatever, they've just taken the best aspects of both characters and put them into these two series. Now, I definitely think that the Batman series, it went longer, is better than the Superman series, even though I like Superman as a character more than Batman.
Superman's much harder to write, though.
I think that we always get into this debate, you and I, which you're like, Superman is harder to write. And I'm like, not really. You just have to you have to do the opposite of what you would do for regular sort of earthbound characters. You know what I mean? Superman is the guy that has to be dealing with like giant science villains and like aliens and stuff like that. And as long as you let your imagination like fly, you could come up with some crazy, awesome Superman stuff.
Oh,
you know?
For sure. I think the problem with that is that it, And you're right. I mean, he's not, if you write him correctly, he's great. But the problem with that is for a series, I feel like there's more, you have to either do more buildup to make it have the proper weight, or it just comes off as a little too sci-fi hokey, because if it's too big and too crazy, then you stop caring, you know, because you can't identify.
Well, but that's what Clark Kent is there for.
You have to merge those two. Right, but he's barely in the series. Well, I take that back. I haven't seen it's been a long time since I've seen the series, but if it goes too crazy, he won't be there too much because he'll be just Superman. That's why it takes more build-up, whereas with the Batman, it's you know, very down to earth, very on the streets in some ways, and that's why it's easier, and you know, we're more familiar with the idea of like crime and, you know, just simple things like organized crime and stuff like that. Like, even if we don't have that in our lives, the concept of someone breaking into someone's house, into someone's, you know, business, stuff like that is very easy to it.
Yeah, but I don't buy that grasp. Either. I mean, sci-fi adventure has been around since the beginning of like the 20th century. Sure. You've got Buck Rogers, you've got Flash Gordon,
a lot of those things come off way more hokey. I'm not saying that it's not possible. I mean, it's definitely possible. And sci-fi is a great, great tool to do like really interesting social commentary too. It's just a matter of it's harder to do that very well.
But I don't think so, because it's not even science fiction. It's like science fantasy. You know what I mean? I mean, you can make up anything, go anywhere, just go crazy. That's why Grant Morrison's like All-Star Superman is like one of the best things, because he embraced like all aspects of the character and he remembered to add that humanity in there. And that's what people forget, is that Superman in some incarnations was born on Earth, in some incarnations was just sent to Earth, but either way, he's kind of one of us, even though he's an alien. So he thinks like us, he feels like us, he hurts like us emotionally, you know what I'm saying? So that's what people forget, and people are like, oh, well, this guy's invulnerable, how can I even imagine that? And I'm like, well, but to a certain extent, like, he has all the emotion that we have. So if he's faced with a giant foe or something that's even almost out of his scope, you know, is something that you could really play off of, you know?
Sure. Well, sorry, I stepped on your toes.
No, go ahead.
But yeah, that's actually something that was really good and kind of cool about this movie, which was not as Superman, but as Clark Kent. You know, Bruce Wayne starts dating Lois Lane.
Yeah.
and you see Clark Kent really ticked off by it, and it's really gets under his skin. It's a good moment, because it's like, yeah, he's just like everyone else, even if he is Superman.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the story a little bit, like the basics of the story. First of all, this thing is almost 20 years old. I just looked
it
up.
And it shows a little.
I honestly, there have been advances in animation, you know, obviously in 20 years. I mean, anything is, you know, but at the same time, like, I can look at an episode of Thundercats and be like, yeah, but I think the look of this really holds up and is almost timeless to a certain extent. Like,
the design, you mean? Like the character, like the design, the look, and
Oh, I really do.
I agree. It looks great. I mean, even today, like the datedness is the aspect ratio is one thing that I noticed.
kept
bugging me. And then also just
you're such a prima donna.
I know.
The aspect ratio.
No, it just stuck out. It didn't bother me. It's just something that like was glaring. I don't know why. I could notice it so much. But the other thing is just the animation, the sets, the backgrounds, the locations. Everything was very like there wasn't a lot. Everything was very minimalistic. You see that in a lot of animation, a lot of stuff where there's like animation where they're, you know, fighting on the streets and there's like no population, there's no people, you know, they're driving through the streets and there's nobody on the roads.
Yeah.
In other animation, you can see that too. It's wherever they have to cut corners. And I definitely noticed it here, although there were some really good scenes with people on the streets and other cars.
It's really interesting because I see it. I was actually pretty impressed with it, because knowing that it was a TV show, know that there's definitely, in animation, there's definitely episodes that get more budget than other episodes. You know what I mean? Like, they have to sort of like parse the budget over the season. And while I was watching this, there were definitely moments where I was like, oh, they use the budget. Like, this thing is moving much better than other episodes that I've seen, because I've actually gone back and started watching it from season one since I started watching this. And you can tell which episodes they're like, okay, this is kind of like, yeah, we're not going to put so much money into this. But this was definitely one where I felt that there were just so many good moments, like with the spider robots and, you know, and his flying, which I think you mentioned over the weekend.
The fighting, the explosions. It's funny to say, but I really like the explosions. It's funny, the details, like the way that the details that they put into things like the cape flying when there's an explosion behind them and stuff like that. That's really, I found really interesting. It looked really good. It made it feel, it gave the characters the proper weight at the proper time type of thing. I was really impressed by that.
Like, you know, and it was also really funny because you talk a little bit about the dated aspect, and I kind of understand what you're saying, but as things are getting slicker and more computerized, even just like with regular, say, like anime, I find myself finding that sort of like analog, for lack of a better term, you know, sort of quality of older animation really charming and giving it some sort of warmth that a lot of new stuff doesn't have, you know?
Yeah, no, I get that. I think the thing, the places to me where it's dated and I would like to see it, it would be cool to be updated, is stuff like pacing and timing, stuff like that. But, you know, when you consider that it was three-part of episodes, because I watched it as the movie, you know, all together.
Yeah.
If I think about it in three parts, it might, you know, feel, the pacing and timing might feel very different. So that might be, you know, one aspect of things that's...
That's funny because I appreciated the timing, like sort of because we were right when we discussed it a little over the weekend at WonderCon. You had said like maybe there were some parts that were a little slow. And it's interesting because I kind of appreciated those parts a lot because they sort of built up the story. You know what I mean? And they didn't, because you have Batman in there, you can't get too spectacular, like with the spectacle. You know what I mean? I mean, it has to sort of remain grounded. And that's always kind of sort of, always was sort of one of the weaknesses of like the Golden Age comics, or whenever they teamed up, they had to have a threat that, you know, both of them could deal with. And that was one of the things that I really liked about this movie, is that they played off of each character's strengths, you know. You know, so I mean, just to get into the basics of the story, the Joker finds out that there's this jade statue, antique, that is actually, everyone thinks is jade, but it's actually kryptonite. He steals it, murders the store owner, and then heads off to Metropolis to basically make a deal with Lex Luthor. Give me, does he say a million or a billion?
I think a billion.
I think he said a billion, and I was like, wow, he's really shooting for it in 1997.
Right?
But he says, Lex, give me $1 billion and I'll kill Superman for you. And Lex basically agrees. And so basically the story is Batman figures out that the Joker is headed to Metropolis for some reason. He thinks he knows why. And at that point, Batman and Superman have not met yet. So this is sort of like an origin of like how they met. And he goes to Metropolis. And so that is sort of the sort of elevator pitch, the short description of what happens. But and it's just really interesting how the whole thing really plays out. Because again, they've never met, and their first meeting is fantastic. Like, it's a nightclub or something.
Yeah. I loved that. That was actually one thing that stuck out really well.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it felt classic, like, this, like, character appropriate, but also didn't feel like, I would say more modern stuff where Batman suffers from popularity. He's so popular that everyone wants him to always win and always, you know, get everything right and be like the best. I mean, to the point where he can take on Darkseid by himself.
I mean,
it's just ridiculous, you know.
Yeah.
And so he was definitely. He definitely wasn't in charge of that moment, but there was a second there that he got the upper hand, and it just, you know, it was it was unexpected and cool.
Yeah. You know, the bit that I love the most about that nightclub sequence is, you know, like Superman slams him up against the wall, slams Batman up against the wall, and he just uses his X-ray vision immediately. Right. To figure out who he is. And, you know, you've seen so many times in comics where, like, someone gets the drop on a superhero and they don't unmask them. Like, Superman's not even messing around. He's like, I'm going to figure out who this guy is. And he looks and he sees that it's Bruce Wayne. And he's, like, shocked. Like, it takes him by surprise. And that moment, to me, is really great because it shows this a little bit of strength that Superman has, you know, over Batman, where he's like, oh, I can figure out who you are immediately. But then, like, the scene, couple of scenes later, you know, Batman gets a drop on him because he places a tracker on his cape, you know, and follows him home to his Clark Kent's apartment. So it's sort of like that beginning sequence that you start to see. They showcase each character's strengths and how they can work against each other and how they can work with each other, right?
Right.
I mean, I definitely think that, you know, and then the other part of the brilliance, too, is, like, how are these two villains going to work together? Because you've definitely got the Joker, who I would consider part of the star of the story, you know, more so than Lex. But it's like, how is Lex Luthor going to rein in this guy who is basically insane, you know? And as we all know, people always underestimate the Joker, especially someone like Lex Luthor. So it's just, they do a really good job in this of playing to each of the character's strengths and weaknesses in the way that they've established them in their own series. Did you get the sense in this that Batman had been around a little longer than Superman?
You mean in the world?
Yeah, in the world that, like, they were
established.
Yeah, definitely.
I definitely felt like that was the case.
Yeah. I mean, even though Superman is sort of the very first superhero, you know, comic book superhero.
Sure.
It's interesting that in this movie, I definitely got the sense, like, oh, Batman's been around a little while. He hasn't had time to check on this Superman, and Superman's just sort of heard of him, and Superman just seemed sort of like fresher or a little more inexperienced. Did that come across?
Yeah, well, definitely felt newer in the sense that, like, Bruce Wayne's asking Lois Lane about him, like, to the point where he hasn't really checked up on him. In other animated movies, I think it was the Justice League War, Batman, it's a different movie they're telling the, when they meet up the first time.
Yeah.
It's also telling that a different origin story, or a different origin story of the Justice League.
Yeah.
And Batman already knows who Superman is. He, like, figured it out before they ever met.
He's been
keeping tabs on everyone. And I like that that wasn't the case here. It wasn't like, I'm the all-knowing Batman who knows everything and has, you know, I mean, there's only so much one person can do. He may be the world's greatest detective, but you only have so many hours in the day. Come on.
Yeah.
So I like that. And yeah, it definitely felt like Superman was newer.
Yeah. I mean, watching this thing, I definitely felt like, when I was watching them, I got the feeling, like, I was like, oh man, I miss these shows so much. You know what I mean?
Right.
I used to really enjoy these. Like, I was talking with my wife about it. And she's like, you used to watch those things all the time. You used to have, like, VHS tapes, and you used to record them all. And you had, like, stacks of tapes. And I'm like, I know. And she's like, you used to watch them over and over again. And I was like, yeah, that's right. That was, like, right before DVDs, like, even came out. You know what I mean? It's like, that's how long ago these shows were on. But they definitely became part of sort of like my comic book DNA, because like it was weird when I was watching this, I felt like I had run into an old friend that I hadn't seen in a long time. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, this is why we used to hang out so much. Like it just like clicked, you know? And I just felt like there's so much like respect for the characters. There's so much respect for the history of the characters. There's so much respect for like, and there's just so much professionalism, like characterization, writing, details, like the plot is so well thought out, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
It's just like, it bounces around from here to here to here. They even give you the sort of like one of the best moments in the series, the Harley Quinn, Mercy sort of cat fight, which is hysterical.
That was really great. And I love how it's done mostly off screen.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a really good moment. Really fun. That was one of the moments I noted. There's quite a few moments in this thing that are a lot of fun. And there's some moments. I don't know if you noticed this. It's something that stuck out to me. There's a point where Lois Lane gets kidnapped, and she's with Bruce Wayne, and they get attacked. And Bruce Wayne gets shot at so much, and no one hits him, and he's literally dancing from the bullets that are shooting on the floor. I don't know why they're trying to shoot his feet. And then even after he falls off the side of the building, and he lands in a very conveniently placed window washer thing. Yeah. They shoot that up so much that it falls apart, but he still doesn't get hit. And then he saves himself by grabbing the side of the building halfway down and pulls himself up the ledge, and they still shoot at him some more from I think it was a balloon or whatever, and they still don't hit him.
I mean
it was, that part was crazy. I get it that it's from the TV show, so it kind of makes more sense, but that was a moment that I stuck out that I wanted to bring up because that was ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a bit of, stormtrooper aim going on in this movie where, you know, Batman gets shot at, Bruce Wayne gets shot at, and they keep missing. But I think that's also one of Batman's superpowers, is that he's the luckiest guy in the world, you know,
right.
Because, you know, there's so many bits, you know, again, they do a really good job, because in the first half of this, I definitely got the sense of like, wow, these guys are like really Batman fans. Like they're making Superman because, you know, Batman reaches, he has a little bit of the kryptonite that he got from the crime scene, and he lifts it up, and Superman's immediately like, and Batman's like, it doesn't take much, does it? You know? And I was just like, Batman, you know? And I kind of remember watching that, when I was a kid and being like, but then they're really good at putting each character in moments where the other one can help the other one out too.
Yeah, no, you know? They did a good job with that. And Superman saves Batman a few times, which, you know, really makes sense because let's face it, you know, it's Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
But Batman still contributes, you know, so it ends up being very, it feels very, I don't want to say even, but balanced might be the right word.
Yeah.
And also something, this is kind of a side thing, but it worth noting as well. If you were a fan of the Batman show, I was too. I really like the Batman show. And this was done, if I remember correctly, after the Batman show.
Yeah.
This show looks slicker than the Batman show. And part of that is because it's Superman. Part of it's because it's better, you know, better animation, better tech, probably. And when Bruce Wayne shows up the first time, he looks really slick. I remember just noticing that they really did a good job of cleaning him up in a way that made him look really slick and like a billionaire, you know, kind of thing.
That's a really good point, because they do a really good job of even the silhouette of the characters when they're out of costume. They do a really good job of like differentiating them. They don't look like they're cut out from the same sort of like model sheet. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Once
mean,
again, the design and animation on this was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that, like you mentioned, like I think Bruce Wayne has a lot of sharper angles, and Batman, Clark Kent, I mean, Superman, Clark Kent is a little bit more rounded, you know, in like around the shoulders and the torso. It's just like really interesting. I noticed that too. The way they stand is very different, you know. You know, when they're in their, you know, Bruce Wayne is much more sort of like confident looking than sort of Clark is. It's just, it's really good, like little touches that you can tell, like these people are paying attention to what they're doing. You know what I mean? And they're like extremely professional. Like, and that's the thing that's always been impressive about the Bruce Timm, you know, Paul Dini and Alan Burnett, you know, universe, is that you can tell that these guys aren't just phoning it in. This kind of isn't just another gig to them, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't think there's, you know, I don't think there's like one bit, despite, you know, some of the stuff that technologically may not hold up to what's going on today in animation, I don't think there's one bit in this whole thing where I felt like they were phoning it in at all.
No, not at all.
And oh my God, how much do I miss Dana Delaney's voice as Lois Lane? I mean, that is like, that's the perfect Lois Lane design, and that is like the perfect voice for Lois Lane. Like, she's like perfect.
I mean, honestly, I really enjoyed all the character actors, all the voice actors on this. I think everyone did a really good job. I don't think there's nothing that I can think of that stands out as being not out of place or not good or, you know, any of that. Like, it really is defining to me, like, of their animation world. And you know, all the new stuff kind of has to compete with all of this, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that this is sort of like the gold standard of like a Batman, Superman, of any of them, you know. I mean, just like I said, they're like the best distillation of the characters.
Yeah,
and it's just like go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, I recently just did a whole Netflix binge watching of a bunch of shows and animated shows. Amongst them was The Batman, one of the newer.
Oh
shows.
Yeah.
Oh my God! When you compare it to this, and you know, I'm thinking of this as a movie, but if I think of this as a TV show, a three-part TV show,
yeah.
The Bat just does not hold up at all.
No,
it doesn't.
Animation
might be better in some ways, but the acting, the story just does not hold up.
No, definitely,
and that's
not
much newer show. So
yeah, you know. I think it's really interesting because I remember when that the Batman, I actually started watching those. I bought some of the seasons like on DVD because I was curious, and I actually found it interesting in a very, it feels much more Saturday morning cartoon than the Bruce Timm version of Batman. You know what I mean? It feels like a little less deep, a little more surfacey, a little more slick, and sort of like less traditional. And it's always been odd to me that somebody at Warner Brothers, you know, said like, let's make this, as opposed to like, let's do more with Bruce Timm. But who knows, you know, sometimes it seems like Bruce Timm is kind of tired of the whole thing.
I'm tired
of this.
But I mean, Bruce Timm's stuff, they definitely made a conscious effort to get away from that at some point because they wanted to change styles.
Yeah.
I think the Justice League Unlimited was like the end of that, where they decided after that to change things up. I think the problem is that people see the same style over time and then they think it's old or dated, even if, you know, so if new stuff comes out, they still assume that it's old just because the style.
Yeah.
even though the style is fantastic. I mean, it's so simplified, but it's so expressive. It's really a good, really strong design. I mean, honestly, that's some of the stuff in that is just, it's just some of the strongest design work, and there's a reason that it still looks good.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah, it's really interesting because I think that what happened for, you know, DC animation was, you're probably right. I mean, it's a good point. I never thought of it, that if it stays around long enough, maybe people might get too used to it or take it for granted and be like, oh yeah, that's kind of old and hokey. But I also think that they were really, especially with that, the Batman show, I think what Warner Brothers Animation, especially with the newer ones, what they've really tried to cash in on is the anime craze. You know, like really, oh, I mean, obviously it's a fact that they send that stuff out to, I think it's Korea now, not even Japan. You know?
No, not Japan. I don't think it's Japan, at least.
Yeah.
As far as I know, a lot of the places is now Korea.
Yeah, yeah. But either way is for, you know, the artists over there to sort of be able to incorporate their style into what the DC stuff is doing. Maybe it's a little easier for the animators to work in, you know, a style that they are used to. But I think more than likely, a lot of this stuff is because of the influence of anime on, like, a lot of young kids.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the newer stuff definitely has a lot of that. And there's also, I mean, if we're going to branch out a little into animation stuff, there's all this, there's a lot of changes that are happening. I mean, I don't know if you remember the Teen Titans show.
Oh, I do. I loved it.
I loved it too, and that was heavily influenced by anime.
Yeah,
I mean, they used the like little funny character moments where they like change shapes and stuff like that. I don't remember what it's called, but they do all that stuff, and the design was very anime too. But the funny thing is, and if I remember correctly, and I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure I'm right, those characters were all 3D. Puppets that were rendered to look 2D. So it's 2D animation done with 3D software.
The Teen Titans?
Mixed with 2D again. So it's not hand-drawn. It's all like puppet movement stuff. Whereas I'm pretty sure the Bruce Timm stuff was all hand animated. And they mix it up now. They do a combination. Certain shows will do backgrounds 3D and then the characters hand drawn. And, you know, everything has its kind of strengths and its look. But, you know, they definitely changed it up. I mean, there's Teen Titans and then Young Justice not that long ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing
that sticks out for me is like the Avengers, sort of like Earth's Mightiest Heroes, where it seemed like they kind of unsuccessfully sort of incorporated that sort of Bruce Timm style and tried to make something of their own. And it's interesting because I find those Avengers cartoons to sort of be the best ones kind of ever done by Marvel. And there's definitely sort of an influence that I think Bruce Timm had on those cartoons, which was very much like, let's have respect for the history. Let's go into the actual stories that were told into the comics, you know, like let's do that sort of thing. And it's just interesting that the style that that show embraced very much reminded me of the sort of, you know, Timverse, as it's kind of known. You know?
Well, I think I can see that. I think the interesting thing about Marvel's animation was that their animation was weird. I mean, they tried to do it very classic looking way back when with X-Men and Spider-Man. And then with X-Men Unlimited, I think it was, or Ultimates, I can't remember. They went the
X-Men
other way.
Evolution?
Evolution. They went the other way entirely. Super, like, stylized in a way. And I really don't remember all those shows because I was not a fan of a lot of their shows.
I loved X-Men Evolution. I liked it a lot. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I didn't think it was that stylized, though. I thought it was very traditional.
I couldn't get into it. The whole school thing was just, it did not do it for me.
The first season is a bit of it's a bit weaker than everything else, but once you sort of get further into it, it's pretty good. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'll have to give it a chance if it's on Netflix or something.
It used to be, yeah.
Yeah. But I think they tried a lot of times to stay very... they tried to, like, stay with the comic look. And I feel like the comics can be very detailed and have a unique look to them, and I don't think that it necessarily translates 100% to animation. I think that recently what they've done is they've kind of gotten away from that and they've stylized their characters, and I definitely could see the Bruce Timm influence in the, like, really broad shoulders, the kind of, you know, triangle design to the guys.
Yeah.
You know, simplified shoulders, you know, kind of cut shoulders where they don't have, like, the like, rolling muscles kind of thing where it's, like, you know, stuff like that, little bit here and there.
Well, more of a simplification of design, getting to sort of the sort of bare bones of, like, what makes the character, you know, makes their silhouette, their figure work. It's interesting because, I mean, that's the thing, is the thing that you and I have to remember is, quite honestly, and watching this movie and watching some of this, just the Superman episodes alone, is how much, like, of a thunderclap that Batman Bruce Timm series was to the animation world. I mean, it changed everything, like, literally changed everything. There's, like, before Batman, you know, adventures, and then there's, like, after Batman adventures, you know, and
Absolutely. It
just showed what you could do with the form. It sort of, like, helped American animation grow up a little bit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and then it also caused, as much as it did that, you know, 10 or 15 years after that, it caused things to go a little crazy because there was this effort to get away from that style, and they couldn't. There was a bit of a stumbling, you know, trying to figure out how to do that. Because, I mean, Marvel did some 3D stuff, and they did some weird, like, computer generated.
Yeah, I remember,
like,
that. Yeah.
I mean, and even DC, not that long ago, did a 3D or computer generated, you know, 3D figures Batman show that they squashed. They put it on some weird time and changed it and, like, buried it. And I don't even remember what it's called. It was, like, Batman, not Evolution, Batman, I can't even remember.
I don't even know. I don't think I've even heard. Oh, the that was another Bruce Timm thing, though. That was, like, the CGI thing, right?
Yeah, but it's all CGI.
Yeah. I didn't see one episode of that.
I've never seen an episode either, but
I gotta look that up.
I actually heard good things about it, but the look of it is I don't know. The few frames I've seen, it looked kind of bizarre to me.
Well, did you see some of the Green Lantern stuff? Because I thought the Green Lantern stuff was okay.
Perfect.
It was. But
it was. And some of their straight-to-DVD movies have been really good, the looks of them. I mean, they're kind of getting it back, but there's still a degree of... like, kind of trying to find a look, you know. There's no unified look anymore, and they're trying to find it. I mean, even with the recent Batman movies, like Batman straight to DVD, I mean, if you see the, like, Son of Batman, or Batman looks, his costume, I mean, his design and costume's weird. When I saw it, I noticed it, and I'm like, he seems too tall and slender, very anime inspired kind of influence. And his mask even has the little chin guard added to it. It just looks, I mean, it's a different look. It's not bad, it's just different. I don't particularly, it's not my favorite, but you know, because, like I said, he seems too slender to me. But whatever.
Here you go. It's called Beware the Batman.
Beware the Batman?
Beware the Batman. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to have to check that out because I was curious into looking at it. And like a lot of people, I was like, I don't know about the look of that. It looks a little too computery. But I'm looking at images right now. And some of the PR images are kind of neat, you know?
Yeah.
I think Nightwing has like long hair. That's kind of weird.
It does look super CG though. I mean, you look at it and it's just like, oh, I'm looking at images right now and it does look super, super CG.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not to say that it'll be bad. It's just a different look. You know?
Well, I mean, it's for sure that these two series or Batman Adventures definitely still 20 years later are influencing everything. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's how strong, how much of a big deal they were. And it's because again, they had guys who read the comic books and kind of like knew what was going on, you know, in the heads of the characters and, you know, were really into it. You know what I mean? And it's from what I understand, I was listening to Hollywood Babylon today. And
oh, yeah, me too.
When Kevin Smith can't get behind a Batman Superman movie, you know, Kevin Smith likes everything. You know what I mean?
He does. He really does.
He's really enthusiastic about new things, but when he can't get behind Batman versus Superman, it's like, wow, something's wrong, you know? And this sort of thing, the Batman Superman movie, World's Finest, is to me the antidote to all that sort of gray. It's almost like the Supergirl show, like that sort of depressing, or the Flash, you know, just like superheroes. Like, I think I told you, like, we saw the trailer. I finally took my wife to go see Deadpool, and we saw the trailer for Batman versus Superman before it, and it just came across to me like the biggest sort of like frat boy NFL football version of a superhero, like, flex my muscle, me strong, you suck, no, you suck, like, just like really just the type of thing that I was just like, wow, this was made for like jocks with no brains, you know what I mean? And
you know what's funny is though that, I mean, aside from World's Finest, there's also the they also did the animated The Dark Knight Returns.
Yes.
They animated that. And I thought that was really good. And, you know, and they fight in that. And that one it works.
Well, because it's a moment that's earned. You know what I mean?
For sure. For sure. There's build up to it. There's a reason for it. There's history. And it's also earned in the in its conclusion and in how it goes. Like, in that fight, you know, Batman's going to lose. He's not winning the fight. He's stalling it.
Yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right.
I mean, he does win with trickery, and that's the only way Batman can win that fight, you know?
Yeah.
But the actual fight itself, not the trickery part, that's all just him stalling.
Yeah.
It's clear he's not going to win.
Well, and that's the thing is like, and my theory of Dark Knight Returns, you know, I've read it again. And especially in that movie, I think they make it very clear that Batman knows that he can't have an extended fight. And that's why he takes the poison pill, because he's got to fake his own death, because he can't do, you know, obviously it leads into his whole plan. But when I was watching the Batman, The Dark Knight Returns animated thing, I think they, even more so than the book itself, they are like, Batman knows that he can't sustain a prolonged conflict with Superman in any way, shape, or form. So he has to fake his death, you know, because then he has to pretend to lose so that he can sort of quote unquote win. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the same thing happens in World Finest to a lesser degree. But I mean, when they first meet, Batman throws Superman, you know, across the room.
Yeah, that's great.
And then,
yeah.
And he does, you know, he does that, and he knows he can't beat the guy. I mean, it's clear there's no way he could physically beat him, but he wanted to prove to show others, because there was the criminal right there, but also to show him, like, he'll take him on. He's not afraid of, doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
It was posturing, you know, even if he can't win, it's all posturing. Same thing with the kryptonite, the way he brings it out and shows it. Like, it's all posturing.
Well, Batman is definitely, like, the Fonzie of the DC universe, like, where he's really cool, and the secret behind Fonzie's coolness, or that people were afraid of him, was because he acted like he could take everybody on, you know. And he's like, when you act like that, I specifically remember him telling, like, Richie Cunningham on Happy Days, being like, if you act like it, people will fall in line, you know what I mean? If you act like you can beat everybody up, then people will believe it, you know. And that's very much a lot of what goes behind, you know, Batman's character, don't you think? Like, the confidence.
Yeah, well, I think the problem is that, honestly, I think the problem might be that the fans believed it too much.
And
and then the new creators then believed it too much. And then you have Batman taking on Darkseid. You're, like, punching him in the face. Like,
yeah.
And you're just like, no, this guy, there's no chance. This can't. You know, can't work, but
Well, I mean, this thing really, the Batman Superman movie, World's Finest. I love saying that over and over again. the whole title. No, World's Finest. I mean, it's really a great bit of, like, storytelling. I mean, I can't, and I think the director's name is Toshihiko Masuda. And if you look up his credits, this guy is the real deal. Like, he has worked on Akira. He has worked on my Miyazaki stuff. He's worked on, like, Naruto.
Mm-hmm.
He's worked on Lupin. The guy has done a ton of stuff, either as a animation director, a key animator, a director. Like, the guy is the real deal. And so, whatever stature he was at when he directed this thing, they really put it in good hands, because I feel like a lot of the action sequences, a lot of the, you know, even the talking stuff doesn't get too boring. You know what I mean? The whole thing to me is very engaging. I mean, there are definitely issues with pacing, and I think that you're right as far as, because it was a three-part on a TV show sort of thing. But I don't know. The guy did an amazing job, you know. And
no, I agree. I think the one of the big issues is the three episodes that it, you know, watching it all at once. Definitely, I definitely feel like it's a issue.
Yeah.
With the pacing, because I'm sure it would feel different had I seen it in three parts. And I'm sure that they would have paced it differently had they originally done it just as a, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah, movie. Yeah.
So that's definitely one of its weak points. But you're right that they kept a lot of things very interesting. A lot of the talking stuff wasn't just them, like, talking heads or just, like, standing around talking. I mean, there's, like you said, the fight between Harley and Percy, is it?
Yeah, Mercy.
Mercy, and they're, they're talking. Oh, I'm blanking on the name. Wow, the Joker and Lex are talking while this fight's going on in the background. And earlier, when they first hatched their plan, they're driving through the city and, like, causing car accidents and stuff talking. You know, that stuff isn't necessary. Like, they didn't have to put that in.
Yeah.
But it was it was a great character because it was, you know, the character of Harley and the Joker and how they approach things and the, you know, the craziness of them. And it also made it entertaining to hear them, you know, to see that while they're talking. Made it way more entertaining than just like them sitting in the back of a limo with talking heads, you know? So.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting because it really is the details in this thing that count. And the little, and there's a whole lot of like thinking outside the box. And there's a whole lot of business that happens that you don't like notice right away. Like one of my favorite sequences in this is, and it's really small. It's, I was watching it, like the third part of it. And it's the scene where they meet Luther and Mercy, the Joker and Harley meet Luther and Mercy at his warehouse, right? And right. Luther's about to set them up to take the fall, you know, and Mercy's got the machine gun. And Harley does something where she's like, what are we going to do, Mr. J? You know what I mean? And she kind of like leans sideways and like her hands are waving. And I'm like, that was amazing. You know what I mean? Because anybody else would have just had her stand there. But she kind of does this like side tilt and then tilts the other way. And she's her eyes like kind of...
Very animated, very not just animated, cartoony in a good way. You know, I mean, they do a lot of the like very exaggerated facial expressions, the mouth stretching to a cartoony extent, which is, you know, cartoons and comics like don't always go together, you know. But they ride that line in a very good way. Instead, it doesn't look silly. It looks just animated, you know. Yeah. It adds personality.
Well, that's what I mean. There's just so much like detail in just the secondary movements. You know what I mean? You see these characters move in ways that, you know, like things that we do when we're not thinking of it. You know what I mean? There's so much attention to that. And I noticed that in this particular movie. I was like, whoa, like Harley's just kind of like swinging around, like doing tilting back and forth. And I was like, that is amazing. Like something about that amazed me. Like, you know, the way that the Joker stands when he's like being all calm. And then all of a sudden, like when he gets animated and he uses the yo-yo to like disarm Mercy. I just thought that whole sequence was just like really interesting. And then,
you know what I noticed on the second viewing was, right after that sequence, they take the plane out.
Uh-huh. And, I know what you're going to say.
Harley has she has overalls on.
Yeah.
And she takes them off, but she does this. She does this weird like jump and jump kick to kick them off.
Yeah.
It was such a weird thing because I don't think you can possibly do that, but it looked right. And it was interesting. It wasn't just someone taking pants off, you know.
Yeah.
They found a way to make it fun.
Well, the bit that I loved was, you know, part of the plot involves the Joker stealing like a flying wing and he paints a smile on it.
Or
he gets Harley to do it. He gets her to do all the work. But the sequence where the plane goes up into the air and like goes down and it's silhouetted against the moon and it looks like a big smile on the moon. And I'm like, wow, was that like a callback to the Tim Burton Batman, like when the plane flies up against the moon and then goes back down in the first Tim Burton movie?
Yep.
Like I was like, wow, like is that a callback? And it was just such a clever bit because it is painted like a smile and it looks like a little face, you know. And there's all sorts of that, you know, kind of stuff throughout the whole thing. You know what I mean?
I love the marble gag.
Oh my God. Yeah. The exploding marbles.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love that bit. That for some reason I like that. I think it's the randomness of it and the unpredictability that fit the Joker so well.
Yeah,
you know, and I love that. I love the Joker all around. It was really weird combination of like gangster and insane person. You know? Like he doesn't. You know, it isn't this like. What I liked about it was it wasn't this like dogmatic, I am an anarchist or I am you know, there wasn't one thing that you can really, like, pinpoint, like, this is all he is.
Yeah.
It was, like I said, part gangster because he's trying to make money, trying to do all this stuff, and then part just lunatic, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that I think a lot of people have missed about the Joker, like, especially maybe the last 10, 15 years, is that he doesn't know he's crazy. You know what I mean? Like, he thinks he's normal. Like, he's like, what? Like, he shoots somebody's, like, kneecap off. And he's like, what? What's the big deal? Like, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't know that he's completely nuts. And in this movie, that's the Joker that you get. And that's why I think we were even talking about, like, the Dark Knight movie. That's why, you know, as great as Heath Ledger's performance is, to me, that's not the Joker, because Heath Ledger is playing it very much as somebody who knows that, yeah, I'm nuts, you know, don't mess with me. Whereas the Joker in this, to me, is a very great, like, true characterization of the Joker, because he's just like, I'm just messing around. What's the problem? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's so much more fun.
And it's also this weird combination of, like, the Joker is both smart and, like, a bumbling idiot at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, he created the poison gas, you know, he has all these little weird inventions that would be very difficult to create, and then and he operates, you know, the flying plane, but at the same time, he's just like, he doesn't entirely know what he's doing, and he just starts pushing buttons, and he doesn't care.
Exactly. He's like, this will do it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's the red one. It's always the red one. Yeah.
He just mashes a bunch of buttons, so he doesn't care.
It's
a very interesting, you know, combination that I find, is lacking in some things. Like you said, the Heath Ledger thing. I mean, I feel like that's a little closer in a way. They kept that a little closer to the Killing Joke,
because
he had a point to make, kind of thing.
Sure.
I enjoyed the Joker a lot. He was very entertaining.
Yeah. I think the Joker is great. I actually, again, really, I love Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor.
This is, like, my favorite Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. I think that this is the Lex Luthor that the comics tried to really have when they recreated him in the 80s, and they never sort of got it right. And this series got it right. Like, Lex Luthor is calm, collected, prone to temper tantrums, and he doesn't do the dirty work himself. You know what I mean? He lets Mercy do it, you know? And in a way, when I was watching this, I was like, wow, the Joker and Lex are very similar in a lot of ways, in that, you know, the Joker lets Harley do all the dirty work, and Lex lets Mercy do all the dirty work. Like, they don't like getting their hands. And that scene where they sit down and sort of have, like, a tete-a-tete while Mercy and Harley are doing the fighting is the perfect example of that. You know what I mean? Where it's like, we're not going to get our hands dirty. Let them fight it out, you know?
Yeah.
And it's hysterical. So, yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot more that we could probably go into on this. I mean, but, you know, obviously anybody listening out there should check it out for themselves, because this is, like, I think there's a link on Vimeo. Somebody put it up on Vimeo. It's also available for free on Amazon Prime. If you look at the Superman animated show, they're free on Amazon Prime, and it's, like, in season 2, and I think it starts with episode 14 or something like that. But definitely check this out, especially if you're like me, who is somebody who's not interested in Batman versus Superman, or you saw Batman versus Superman, like a lot of people have emailed me and been like, you were right, it was terrible. So if you need something to cleanse the palate, this is the thing to seek out, I think. You know, as is the Batman series, as is the Superman series, as is Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. I think if you want like really good versions of the DC characters, this is what you have to seek out. And it's a damn shame that they never approach these people for the live action versions.
I agree. A lot of the animation, the straight to DVD stuff, the Flashpoint.
Yeah.
That one was really good. I haven't seen them all, so I can't comment on them all, but a lot of them are really good. And I will also say, even Young Justice was really a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
One of the more recent ones, and that was a lot of fun, too. So, yeah, definitely worth watching. And if you haven't seen it, definitely worth seeing it for the first time. And, of course, if you've seen it, then you probably remember it being good and worth a rewatch.
Yeah, and if you're like me and you love those shows and you haven't watched them in a long time, it's going to be watching this or any of those episodes is going to be like, it's going to be like an old friend, like walking through the door, and you're going to be like, oh man, I missed you so much. Where have you been? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I loved it. So any final thoughts on this, Liad?
No, just that it's, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a good watch and really good animation, you know, so, I mean, really, that's it.
Yeah, to me, I think this is probably one of the, I mean, this is one of the best, you know, interpretations of the characters meeting for the first time. It's definitely better than anything Zack Snyder's got, in my opinion. And it's definitely, and I think these Batman cartoons are better than anything that Christopher Nolan put out. I will say that these episodes and shows are, you know, the gold standard, you know, so definitely seek them out. They're all available on DVD. The prices, I think, have dropped, you know, so you can get them for cheap on, you can get the seasons for cheap on Amazon. And, you know, I know that Batman is available for free, Batman Adventures on Amazon Prime, and Superman is. So definitely check them out. And that's pretty much it. You should watch this movie as soon as possible. And this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. My name is Christian Horn. I'm with my friend Liad Goldberg. And this week we were talking about the Batman-Superman movie, World's Finest. Thanks for listening. And we're going to be back next week with Daredevil Season 2, Part 2. Find us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, yada, yada, yada. Write us a review on iTunes. I would appreciate that, even if you think I suck.
No, just do the 5 stars. If you
yeah,
just if you don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all.
Anyway, yeah, definitely check out World's Finest, and we will be here next week. Thanks again, Liad. And
thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. Bye.